here this Monday on Issues Etc. We're going to hit the ground running, even though we are running rather far from home. Jeff and I are, I would say it's fair to say Jeff is missing his family after we've been on the road for a couple of days here. Last night we were at Emanuel Lutheran Church in Dearborn, Michigan, broadcasting live our nationally syndicated edition of Issues Etc. Dr. Richard Schuette was our guest to talk about the person and work of the Holy Spirit. And today on the second leg that almost did not hit the ground this morning, we had a few technical difficulties. On our second leg of the Issues Etc. Reformation Tour, we are on the campus of Concordia University in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Our guest here in the first half hour is going to be the president of this institution, Dr. Tom Alsmeyer. We're going to talk about the means and the message of Dr. Robert Schuller. Now, you can join us. We are coming to you live this Monday, May the 1st. And our call-in numbers are, as usual, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. We can take your email here. Do they call this the Cardinal's Nest, Dr. Alsmeyer? Here in the Cardinal's Nest, we can take your email as well with your questions and comments throughout these 3 hours. IssuesETC@KFUO.org. IssuesETC@KFUO.org. Now, in the second half hour of the program, after we talk about the means and message of Dr. Robert Schuller, we're going to spend just a little time with a couple students here at Concordia University in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Men who are preparing for the pastoral ministry, they're pre-sem student, that means pre-seminary. They're getting ready to go on to study at a seminary to become a pastor in the church. And we're going to be asking and answering that question, why become a pastor, coming up in about 25 minutes here on Issues Etc. And then for hours 2 and 3, as we usually do when we do our Issues Etc. Reformation Tour, we're going to be doing a pastor's roundtable. Some area pastors join us. We're going to be talking about original sin. Again, our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Our guest for the first hour is Dr. Tom Alsmeyer. He is president of Concordia University here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and he also studied the rhetorical vision of Dr. Robert Schuller for his doctoral dissertation. We have reviewed Dr. Schuller's sermons and then the sermons of his son from the Crystal Cathedral in Garden Grove, California, many, many times on Issues Etc. Our listeners, if they haven't watched Dr. Schuller on television, have certainly heard these sermons as we've analyzed them on our program. Dr. Alsmeyer, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. We'd like to welcome you and Jeff to the campus of Concordia University Ann Arbor, the most beautiful of the 12 campuses of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
You know, we're sitting in this Cardinal's Nest, and right out the back behind us is a beautiful river running there. What is this river, Dr. Alsmeyer?
It is the Huron River.
The Huron River. Does it run down from Lake Huron any place, or is it even related to that? No? You don't know? Oh, my goodness, he's not up on his Michigan geography.
I'm a Buckeye. I'm sort of transplanted here. So this is, I get a lot of hisses out from the.
Well, it's absolutely beautiful, and it's a beautiful afternoon here in Michigan. What would you say is the, will be, when Dr. Robert Schuller finally shuffles off this mortal coil, what do you think will be his lasting legacy in American Christianity?
Well, He was a proponent of a movement that probably goes back to the 1900s. Phineas Quimby handed it off. Mary Baker Eddy. You have Norman Vincent Peale. Mm-hmm. You have Robert Schuller. And then I really have not studied enough in recent years to know who he will hand this legacy on. But it's this message of possibility or positive thinking that is just part and parcel of the Americanization of Christianity.
You mentioned Norman Vincent Peale, and you had an opportunity during your doctoral work to actually talk with Dr. Schuller.
That's
and
correct.
Look at what's going on, or what was going on there at the Crystal Cathedral in Garden Grove. What impressed you the most about, first, as Dr. Schuller is kind of an individual in American Christianity, influential as he is, but also about he's had a very consistent message, and he does reference Norman Vincent Peale on a regular basis, this kind of power of positive thinking. What impressed you the most about him as a man and then his message as well?
Well, first of all, when I worked out of his private office there on the Tower of Hope up there, he has three photographs of three clergymen he says have been influential in his ministry. He has Norman Vincent Peale, who taught him how to popularize the gospel. He had Bishop Fulton Sheen, who showed him how to integrate psychology and theology. And then the third person is Billy Graham, who he said taught him how to introduce people to a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Those are his three autographed pictures and his three heroes, you might say. I think he has, as an individual, he's a very sincere person. I thought he would be sort of hyper. He's a very laid-back kind of person, very aware of when I told him I was from the Missouri Synod. He said, "Oh, you're from the Missouri Synod. You want to study me?" And I said, "Yeah, I take it you've gotten some fan mail from our folks." And he said, "Oh, yes, I have." So he's very tuned in, I think, to different denominations, especially ours. Very interested in what I was writing about, and just a prince of a person to work with and interview, and he made his whole staff available to me.
And I will say that we had an opportunity about a year or 2 years ago to interview Dr. Schuller in Chicago, and the one thing that did strike me is a very honest man. You knew exactly where he stood. He told me several times in the course of our conversation, in a very kind way, "You are wrong." Uh-huh. And I think our conversation would have gone on for about an hour, even with his limited time, except his publicist cut the conversation off.
I had the same experience. I was cut off as well. Same experience.
All right. What are your concerns? Let's talk about kind of the nut of his message, if we could, and then get into his method. But what are your concerns about his message as it has been influential in American Christianity?
Well, I think what he does is he's a master storyteller. They say of him when he was at Hope College up in Holland, Michigan, that he could charm the pictures off the wall. He was just a marvelous storyteller. And what I see that he has done and what I study in this dissertation is how he takes certain stock themes that have been popular throughout American history, American rhetoric or communication history, and he wraps the Christian message around those or he uses those as the bearer of the Christian message. For example, he'll talk about a classic theme in American public address is fetching good out of evil. And again, you'll see in Schuller's message, he talks about how this was seemingly an insurmountable, difficult situation, but positive thinking people persevered. Another message he talks about is he talks about the quest that's a classic theme, that people go on this journey and it has twists and turns in their life, but it ends up in a golden, rousing finale. And he'll use that theme again and again. And the whole point of my dissertation is that when he begins in that kind of a storyline, instantly we sort of lock in. We say, yes, this is something we have heard before. And so consequently, he creates or carves out what I would call a rhetorical audience, a group of people who buy into what he is saying and who almost know what he's going to say before he says it.
So in other words, it sounds like he is tapping into themes. Mm-hmm. That Americans, maybe Westerners in general, but Americans in particular, automatically resonate with. It's kind of the meta-narrative of the American experience, this kind of the pioneer who overcomes insurmountable obstacles, rugged individualism, that kind of a thing.
Exactly.
All right. Do you think that message, it seems to have played so well with the greatest generation, mm-hmm. and even with the kind of front wave of the baby boomers. Do you think it's the kind of message that is going to be taken seriously by the younger generation, the Gen X and the millennial generation?
You know, I read of what this Gen X or millennial generation is like, but I still think there are enough people who resonate to... I think these themes will continue on in American public address in one form or another. And Schuller uses them with celebrities. I always remember the one I sort of winced at was when he had Tommy Lasorda, the manager of the Dodgers, on, and Tommy Lasorda talked about that big Dodger in the sky. And I sort of went, ooh, you know, God's a little more than that, especially since I'm an Indians fan. I found that to be a tough reference. But nonetheless, I think we still resonate to celebrity type of endorsement of products, including, if we can call it that, Christianity. Schuller, we resonate to success. Those will be things that will carry on regardless of certain emphases you find in different generations.
So do you think that as kind of in the fabric of American culture that a guy like Dr. Robert Schuller has won himself a place – along with Bishop Sheen, the others who will be, who will actually get their pictures, even however small, in American history textbooks.
Yes, I think he has, and especially in American Christianity, because he's somewhat unique, at least from previous, or a lot of the electronic church people, in that he actually did it. He was the pastor of a congregation, and a very successful one. I mean, that Crystal Cathedral was a phenomenal tribute just to organizational leadership, that he was able to put that thing together and bring it to completion.
How much is the Crystal Cathedral a symbol, as a congregation, as a internationally known landmark in Garden Grove, California? How much is a symbol of Schuller himself as a man and his influence in American Christianity?
Well, I know we talked before the show about how, and I didn't see this episode when Schuller handed off the ministry to his son, that he talked about himself. But I think that Schuller and the message are sort of intertwined. He embodies the success narrative. And I guess in that sense, the Crystal Cathedral, the Tower of Hope, I mean, you go up there and you look out and you can see the original drive-in theater there in Orange County.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it's kind of neat. You look one way, you see that. You look the other way, you see the Matterhorn there at Disneyland. It's a marvelous view out there. And in fact, the day I was out there, there was a giant crane, and they were rubbing something across the Crystal Cathedral, and it glistened in the sun. I asked his secretary, I said, are they painting a reflective substance onto that? And she laughed. She said, no, they're just cleaning it. They had a giant squeegee, and there's so much air pollution in Southern California that when they rub that across the glass, just like we have to paint our churches, he has to use a big squeegee on his.
Well, that's very interesting. That's an image that kind of sticks with you. We're talking about the means and message of Dr. Robert Schuller. Dr. Tom Allersmeyer is our guest. He's president of Concordia University here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We're broadcasting live this Monday from Ann Arbor. Dr. Allersmeyer studied the rhetorical vision of Dr. Robert Schuller for his doctoral dissertation. You can join us with questions or comments. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Okay, we have analyzed Dr. Schuller's sermons on many occasions, and then those of his son as well. And I use a three-part diagnostic to analyze these sermons. It's really kind of simple. In fact, it doesn't tell you much more than whether or not the sermon, whatever sermon it may be, is about Jesus Christ and what he's done for you, or about something else. Mm-hmm. So here's the three-part diagnostic. And tell me if it's a fair test for the message and the method of Dr. Robert Schuller. First of all, keep a running tally as you listen to the sermon how often Jesus is mentioned. Just a simple running tally, you know,
sure.
Making your little hash marks. Doesn't tell you much more than if Jesus isn't mentioned, then the sermon was very likely not about him in any real sense. Part two of the diagnostic: if Jesus is mentioned, then is he the subject of the verbs? Is this a sermon about what Jesus does or about what we do for Jesus?
Uh-huh.
You see the distinction there? And then if Jesus is mentioned and he is the subject of the verbs, then part three is, what are those verbs? What is the preacher telling you Jesus has done, is doing, will do for you? And at the end of this diagnostic, you have a very, very simple and crude tool to determine whether or not the sermon was about Jesus and what he does, or about perhaps you and what you do. We've analyzed those sermons with Dr. Schuller, and there have been whole sermons where he goes without ever mentioning Jesus Christ at all, really without any mention sometimes even of a divinity. There are a lot of sermons where he just fails miserably. You think it's a fair tool to use to evaluate the preaching of a guy like Dr. Robert Schuller?
I don't know that. I'm trying to think, when you say fair, first of all, you know, I'm a very committed Christian pastor of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, so I would say it's a very accurate biblical picture to use.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I guess, you know, it depends on what audience is talking about fair, because Schuller himself will say, and I don't agree with this. In fact, I told him that I felt he could be just as popular and be a little bit more Christ-centered. But Schuller will compare what he does in sermonizing as sort of like the I don't know, the carnival barker who stands outside the tent and says, hurry, hurry, step right up, come into the tent. And there's something in there of value. And Schuller makes no bones about it. He says, what I do on Sunday morning is just window dressing to lure people in. So when you say fair, if I were to stand back as a secular person, I'd say, no, probably that isn't fair. Schuller his sermon on Sunday morning isn't to drive Christ. But then if you were to ask me as a Christian pastor, I would say absolutely fair and absolutely accurate.
Why do you think it is, or did you get a sense from him in your dealings with him, in your study of him, that he feels comfortable standing not only in the public pulpit of the Crystal Cathedral, but then knowing that this is being broadcast internationally every Sunday? He feels comfortable presenting what he would say is a Christian message with so little reference to Christ, the cross, the message of salvation. Why do you think he feels comfortable that way?
Well, because, and you mentioned what's his effect on Christianity, I have heard this even among very conservative Lutheran Christians, that there is something called pre-evangelism, where you just sort of soften up the ground, or you kind of get the troops ready for something. And that's what he's doing. He is doing pre-evangelism. And he apparently is comfortable in doing that. If you would actually delve into his congregation and watch what they do on a typical Sunday or on the Wednesday evening or whatever, it would have much more the trappings of a classical Reformed Church in America congregation. But he feels Sunday morning is to get people within earshot of Christianity.
I think that jibes with what he said to us when we talked with him a year and a half ago. He said, if I remember correctly, he said, you know, there are a lot of churches out there looking for the seekers. He says, I'm out there looking for people who aren't seeking.
Right.
He claims to be casting this broad net. Why do you think so many of his references, when he does mention God, are to a generic God? No real specific designation as to what God. Is he assuming his audience knows that he's making reference to a Christian God?
No. I think he's broadcasting as opposed to narrow casting. As we talked before the interview, before going on the air, we know that many people listen to Schuller and they fill in the gaps. They listen to him with Christian ears, with, in our case, Lutheran Church Missouri Synod ears. They understand what the gospel is and they fill in the blanks. But then he's also talking to people who have absolutely no connection with any kind of faith. And in that sense, he wants to be as generic as possible. In fact, his theme verse, I should have looked this up before we came on the air, but there's a passage in Isaiah that talks about, I will be a builder of bridges. I'm trying to remember that reference. A repairer of the breach, I think, is the way it is in the King James Version. And I think he has said that's my life mission. I'm there to take people who are totally outside the realm of Christianity and get them within at least some kind of earshot of a message.
With only a few minutes here, because I do want to ask you about Concordia University in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and let you brag a little bit on your university.
I have a lot to brag about.
We talked earlier about the influence of Dr. Schuller and kind of his place in American Christianity. Do you think he has been of a real influence in the average Christian pulpit on Sunday morning to what is being preached there? Or perhaps, in a worst-case scenario, what's not being preached there, like the message of sin and things like that?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. And I think you'll find that across a number of Christian denominations. And that is this idea that we assume people come into a sanctuary knowing that they're sinners. So consequently, why sit there and if the tent peg is already in the ground, hammer it another 10 feet down? Let's assume that they know that they're sinners. If they don't know sin by name, they feel it in terms of their relationship with their spouse or with their children or with their parents or the difficulty at a job. And so we're there to encourage them, to build them up with the good news. Mm-hmm. And you see that in among some fairly conservative denominations. I've heard that in different pulpits myself. Not a lot of time given to sin, but just assuming we already know we're there.
Okay, tell us about Concordia Ann Arbor. And you've been here for a couple of years. What was your first impression, and how would you describe this as an educational institution? You've got about a minute and a half.
I came here with the idea, see the Concordia that I see. I feel people looked at all the, you might say, the deficits. It had struggled over the years with some enrollment issues. When I came here, I thought, what a phenomenal resource this is for the church, a beautiful campus, a gifted faculty. The seminaries won't say this aloud, but to me they talk about just how well-prepared our young men are who come into seminary. And now with the deaconess program, our young women, our teacher candidates that go out are just bragged about in the church. All these resources were there. I saw that coming in and just felt that a few things had to be done to make more people aware of this and connect this wonderful ministry with the church and with the greater community.
Now, I was walking past your office just over there, and I noticed there is a, I imagine that this is someone's big dream. There's a map of what may happen in the near future here at Concordia Ann Arbor. Tell us briefly about that.
What we have done is there are some buildings that we look to put up in the very near future. We've looked at revamping our science labs, also our student recreational areas to expand on our existing gymnasium. And what that is, in order to do those steps, we need to also know steps 10, 11, and 12. So it's something our church body asked us to do and something we took a lead on, in fact, and that was to put together a master plan to say, here are the things that we're going to do and here are the things we dream of doing. And you never know. Somebody goes by and sees that and says, hey, I believe in what's going on there, and I'd like to see that happen. And I've had that happen as a director of a high school association, and I suspect it may happen here, that there'll be somebody that says, I'd like to support that. Then all of a sudden, something that was 5 or 6 years off becomes a reality in the near future.
What is the basic mission of Concordia Ann Arbor?
It is to prepare men and women for lives of service in the church and in our world. So it prepares professional church workers, and it also prepares lay people who will go out and articulate the message of Jesus Christ in whatever profession, vocation that God places them in.
Dr. Tom Allersmeyer is president of Concordia University here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. He studied the rhetorical vision of Dr. Robert Schuller for his doctoral dissertation. It's a pleasure talking to you and kicking off today's broadcast from Concordia University, Ann Arbor. Thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Pastor. Welcome.
Well, Tom mentioned there these well-prepared young men. Just a minute ago, we're going to have a few of those well-prepared young men join us here for a little students roundtable as we broadcast live this Monday, May the 1st, from Concordia Ann Arbor in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We're going to be joined by a few men who are preparing for the pastoral ministry. If I can get my computer to do what I want it to do, Joshua Schmidt and Andrew Yeager, Andy Wright and Jacob Miller will be joining us around this table in just a few minutes to talk about why become a pastor, and then some men who are a little farther along in their study for the pastoral ministry, some guys who actually have collars around their necks. I can see a few of them joining us already. We're going to be joined by a roundtable of local pastors to talk about what Robert Schuller won't talk about, and that is original sin. We're going to talk about whether or not man, as he is born as a son of Adam or a daughter of Adam, has anything whatsoever to offer God by way of obedience or capacity. And we'll explore some of the ins and outs of original sin. That's coming up here in about 30 minutes on Issues Etc., a two-hour pastor's roundtable on original sin. Stay tuned. We'll be right back for the second half hour of Issues Etc.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc. What impact do teachings like creation, the fall into sin, the cross of Christ, law and gospel, simultaneously saint and sinner, the Word of God, baptism, and the Lord's Supper have on everyday life? Our Issues Etc. book of the month for May is titled A Theology to Live By, The Practical Luther for the Practicing Christian. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about A Theology to Live By on our website, issuesetc.org. The cost is $14.99 plus shipping and handling. Luther's theology is not abstract speculation, but teaching with a practical application for the real Christian life. A Theology to Live By, Practical Luther for the Practicing Christian, by Herman Preuss. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for May. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org.
From the National Institutes of Health, this is NIH Health Matters. Researchers have found that by knocking out a gene in the brain, they can create a mouse that is not bothered by situations that would ordinarily trigger instinctive or learned fear responses. Hence, a living, breathing, mighty mouse. According to a study funded by the National Institutes of Health, a gene in the mouse brain encoding a protein called Stathmin appears to be critical in forming fear memories. Dr. Vadim Bolshakov, a Harvard University grantee of the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke and the National Institute on Drug Abuse, says that Stathmin knockout mice can be used as a model of anxiety states.
This study could lead to the development of new treatments for anxiety disorders.
Researchers say this new information will help in the search to discover causes of anxiety in the human brain. From Bethesda, Maryland, I'm Bill Schmalfeld. This has been NIH Health Matters.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. I wonder what worshipers heard yesterday at World Harvest Church and at Fairfield Christian Church in Ohio. These two churches have been charged by a group of ministers with violating IRS rules by bringing politics into the pulpit. Reverend Eric Williams said his group wants these churches to stop acting like electioneering organizations. I don't want to harm or demonize these churches, he said. I want these churches to act legally. Replied Reverend Russell Johnson, there's still freedom of speech in this country, and it should apply to Christians as well. People need to get out of their pews, out from behind stained glass windows, and shine a light for what is good and right. A darling of these Ohio conservatives is Secretary of State J. Kenneth Blackwell. He says, political and social and cultural forces are trying to run God out of the public square. Well, true, some people want no mention of God in public life. But what about clergy running the true message of Christ out of the church? When New England clergy preached against Thomas Jefferson in the election of 1800, Abraham Bishop wrote, "The clerical politician is an useless preacher. The political Christian is a dangerous statesman." What do you hear in church? Is it May Day?
To mark the closing of the special exhibition First Lady's Political Role and Public Image, the Missouri Historical Society is offering a theatrical performance, Tea for Three, Lady Bird, Pat and Betty, a one-woman play exploring the lives of First Ladies Lady Bird Johnson, Pat Nixon and Betty Ford. It's at the Missouri History Museum, Lyndall and DeBolivar in Forest Park, on Saturday, May 6th at 8 p.m. and Sunday, May 7th, a 2 p.m. matinee for that. Tea for Three, Lady Bird, Pat and Betty.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Before we go on with our roundtable of young men studying to become pastors, let me tell you a little bit about our Issues Etc. book of the month for May. Here we are on the very first day of May. It's called A Theology to Live By, The Practical Luther for the Practicing Christian. Luther has been understood and misunderstood for almost 500 years. And getting to the center of his theology really gets the Christian to the center of what Luther understands to be Christianity. No light between those two ideas for Luther, his theology and the Christian faith. That's part of the theme of this book, A Theology to Live By. It's our Issues Etc. book of the month for May. You can find out more about it by going to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and ask for the Issues Etc. book of the month for May, A Theology to Live By, The Practical Luther for the Practicing Christian. If you're like me and you're addicted to Luther quotes, this book is about one half Luther quotes. So that's what I do when I go through a book. I just do like this. You can't hear that. I just spin through the pages looking for the Luther quotes, and then I steal them. And if that's the only reason you have this book in front of you, it's a great reason to have it. Concordia Publishing House, their number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. It's the Issues Etc. book of the month for May. Joining us here around the table at Concordia Ann Arbor are four young men, all of them within at least a year or so of embarking on their seminary education. Let's welcome Andrew Yeager, Joshua Schmidt, Andy Wright, and Jacob Miller to Issues Etc. Gentlemen, all of you, welcome to Issues Etc. They're joining us here to talk about why become a pastor. I'm just going to kind of go around the horn here, starting with Jacob. Jacob, by the way, for our St. Louis listeners, is a boy from New Minden, Illinois. He's got a father there who's Pastor Tim Miller at St. John's in New Minden. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And where do you fall in the line of Miller children?
I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest of how many?
Of four boys.
That's a young family, by the way. Anyone who knows the Millers, either Tim or the rest of the family, knows that in the Miller family, four boys is that's a pretty small clan in the Miller family. You come from a pretty big family, don't you?
Yes, we do.
And then right down the line here, we have Andy Wright. Andy, where are you from? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm from Circleville, Ohio, which is right below Columbus. I know those are kind of words that you want to not speak too loudly up here in Ann Arbor, but and I go to church in Lancaster, Ohio, and my pastor is Jack Davidson at Redeemer Lutheran in there. So,
all right. Across from him is Joshua Schmidt. Joshua, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm from Holt, Michigan, just south of Lansing. I attend St. Matthew Lutheran there. My pastor is Dean Pellett.
I remember that name from someplace. I'll have to remember what it is later. And then we have Andrew Yeager. Yes, Andrew's over there on the catty corner from me. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm from Baltimore, Maryland, Southeastern District. I go to Nazareth Lutheran Church, Pastor Paul V. Bickle.
All right, let's start with the seniors, if we could, and then we'll go on to the underclassmen. Both of you are about to embark on your seminary education. Do you feel like you're well prepared for the, and I can guarantee you it will be, the 4 years of academic turmoil and hard labor that seminary will be? You guys feel like you're prepared to do that? Yeah. Go ahead.
Very much. And I have to thank my professors here for doing a great job preparing us, especially with the languages stick out in my mind as one of the most rigorous subjects here at Ann Arbor. And very thankful to them for all the effort that they've put forth for us.
What about you, Jake?
Yeah, I would
Joshua,
have to agree.
Yeah,
that's right. I would have to agree that my education here and throughout my school career, I've gone to a Lutheran school my entire life, and I definitely feel prepared to take the next step at seminary. And I would have to agree with my friend Andrew that especially in the languages department, I feel that Ann Arbor has really prepared me in that regard.
Tell us a little bit about what you've had to study by way of the languages. You know, people kind of toss this out. These young men studying for the ministry say they have to take the languages. What exactly does that entail in the pre-seminary program, Joshua?
Well, I am actually a Greek minor. I'm minoring in Greek, and but for pre-sem requirements, it requires you to take at least a year of Greek and a year of Hebrew. Is that all?
Right.
I think
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
And I've actually...
You've taken both of those now, haven't you?
You're
a senior.
Yes, I have. I just finished my first year of Hebrew, and I have taken 3 years of Greek now.
Good boy.
So
good boy.
Yeah.
And what was the toughest thing about the hurdle of the languages for you, Andrew?
Oh, probably the grammar. The vocab comes to you pretty easy, but the Greek grammar is probably the hardest thing that I've ever had to conquer in my 4 years of college. So
I've got a remedy for that, by the way, and that is take Latin. And after you've taken Latin, then the Greek grammar will make perfect sense to you. It's just a good remedy for that. All right, now for the underclassmen, Jacob, you, what has been the most difficult thing about your path to the ministry so far?
Actually, I'm going to have to agree with them. I've already started Greek, and I'm going to go right along with them and say that.
So that's the hardest thing. All right, Andy?
Well, I'm actually a biblical languages major, so it's kind of, people accuse me of being a masochist many times, but I like the languages. So I've had German and Latin and Greek and Hebrew and all those fun things. But I think the toughest thing might be, I don't know, doctrine with Professor Shuda is pretty tough, who's on your program a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's people like to call it Shudamatics many times for his expertise in the field of doctrine. So that is pretty tough.
Okay, now, are you the only pastor's kid we have sitting here, Jacob, or any of the rest of you coming from pastor's families?
I believe I'm the only one.
All right. Talk about that a little bit, because when I started studying for the ministry, that was the question I got the most from people who, after they looked at me and said, why would you want to do something like that? The first question that came to them was, well, obviously you must come from a pastor's family. It would stand to reason then that you would become a pastor. Was there pressure on you in the Miller house to follow in dad, uncle's, various uncle's footsteps?
In our house at home, no. Within our church, there was, I guess, a little bit maybe of expectation of, like, I have a whole stack of confirmation cards at home saying, oh, you're going to grow up to be just like your dad or make us such a wonderful
pastor. You do look
pastor.
A lot like him, by the way.
thanks, I suppose. but, I mean, really, it doesn't, there are some things that it really did help with. The people in our church, they're great people. They really showed how much they really honor and respect Dad. They treat him very well. And,
was there anything in growing up in a pastor's family that gave you pause to say, okay, I've seen it from the inside. I know what this looks like on the ground. Maybe I don't want to do this.
Yes. You know, I mean, things like, you know, he's gone at meetings lots of nights of the week. You know, he doesn't sit with us in Sunday morning in church. You know, little things like that. Like, I remember going on vacation as a kid. It was kind of weird to have him sitting there with us in the pew.
Yeah, I imagine it is. Pastor Zwanitzer mentioned something yesterday. He's going to be at a round table in the next half hour. He mentioned something yesterday about having that rare opportunity to sit with his wife, Bonnie, and not have anything to do on Sunday morning. I've come to take that for granted, by the way, because I've been sitting in the pew for about 7 years now. But at first it was very strange, and my son would look over at me like, who are you? What are you doing here sitting in the pew with us? Okay, here's the question for each and every one of you. Let's start with you, Jacob, because you may or may not have a more realistic picture. When you think, someday I will be a pastor, what do you picture? What is it that you picture yourself doing in the life of the church?
Me personally, I kind of see myself as, you know, going to a church and, you know, teaching people and preaching on Sunday. I don't know, kind of. What my dad did, you do have a little bit of a better idea of what you're getting yourself into coming from a pastor's family. You kind of are familiar with the workload and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if that's, hopefully that's kind of the answer you were looking for.
Well, I'm not looking for any answer. I'm trying to figure out what you guys picture, because I know what I pictured when I was at your stage of studying for the ministry. And just to kind of give you, I hope it doesn't discourage any of you, it was absolutely nothing like what it actually turned out to be. What do you picture, Andy?
Well, so I kind of have a different look, not coming from a pastor's kid point of view, but I've always loved going to church. I love the liturgy and I love worship. That's one of the things that I really just love. I love liturgy. And I don't know, when I picture being a pastor, at the Fort Wayne Seminary, on the pulpit, they have a crucifix. And it's, we preach Christ crucified. And it's kind of, I really don't know what it's like yet to preach, but just being up there, and we sang in our chapel today, we had a hymn sing, and we sang one of the Easter hymns. We sang in this hymn about Christ has triumphed, he is living. And just to be able to stand up in that pulpit, look out there, see your congregation and say, Christ is risen, he is risen indeed, he has triumphed, and bring that message, the gospel, to people, and then be able to just be stewards of the mysteries of the church, just the sacraments, baptize the babies, administer communion, visit the sick, just all those things like that. I don't know how to explain it, but just hopefully someday we'll be able to, by God's help and guidance, do those things.
Andrew, what do you picture when you think about being a pastor?
Well, the Lord needs workers for the harvest, and based on the bar that was set by the pastors in my hometown and now here at Concordia, that bar has been raised very high for me, and I anticipate the ministry is a challenging work, but also a most noble work. And a job that I'm very very excited about, not just a job but a way of life even. Very excited to graduate seminary and serve a church in that capacity.
And Joshua, what do you picture when you think about being a pastor?
Well, I know it won't be an easy task, but I still am looking forward to it, mainly being a servant to my congregation and being up there in front of them on Sunday morning, preaching the gospel to them, and throughout the rest of the week as well, attending to their needs in whatever capacity that they may need me in, and just being able to serve them and give them the gospel and give them hope.
Hey, Jeff, you know what encouraged me about those four answers from these four guys? You know what it was? Remember we had Swirl on this last week, and we were talking about he was doing a sermon, and his Easter sermon from a couple of years ago, Pastor Bill Swirla of Holy Trinity Church in Hacienda Heights, California. And in the midst of this Easter sermon, he said, whenever I talk to young men who are getting ready to go to the ministry and they tell me, I want to become a pastor because I like working with people, he says, I know one thing for sure, and that is they haven't worked with people very much. And he said, do not go into the ministry because you want to work with people. It's not that fun in the first place. And it's very encouraging to hear these four young men talk about kind of the substance of the ministry rather than I'm going into the ministry because I want to work with people. Not that working with people is necessarily that bad. It's just not necessarily the best reason to go into the ministry. Who was the biggest influence on you to make this decision to study for the pastoral ministry?
My pastor back home was also my religion teacher for 4 years in high school. So I've had a lot of training with him. Pastor Bickle, that name is a big name here in the Michigan district. He was definitely he got the ball rolling, is so you could say, for me thinking about the ministry.
Was there a time when he said to you, young man, you ought to think about becoming a pastor?
Many people have. He did in so many words. Not that bold about it, but it was more of a process and less of a statement, I guess.
And you, what cinched it for you?
Well, I'd always gotten a lot of encouragement from people in my church and especially my parents, who have always been supportive of me. And another big influence was my former pastor, who now teaches down at St. Louis Seminary, Dr. Joel Bierman. He was my pastor, and when he heard that I was considering the ministry, he sent me a letter telling me that this was a good route for me to take and really encouraging me in that regard, and that definitely helped cinch it for me.
Andy, what was the biggest influence on your decision to study for the pastoral ministry?
That's a good question. I don't know. I haven't really had maybe. I have had a lot of people, but I don't know if one person has really just stuck out more than another person. Everybody I know at my home parish has just been really supportive of me. Every time I come home on break, they give me hugs and they say, we're praying for you. And we do appreciate those things when people, it helps, you know, when you're staying up, you know, till about 1 o'clock in the morning studying for that Greek exam, which we had this morning, that, you know that those people are supporting you back home. But I think my dad might have been one of the most influential people in me going into the ministry.
And Jacob, for you.
Well, I would have to say, as I said earlier, that the people in my congregation and definitely mom and dad, but also the organization of Ongoing Ambassadors for Christ, basically their mission is just to reach as many people for Jesus Christ, primarily by doing a lot of things that pastors do in their ministry, going to nursing homes, talking to people, doing house calls, leading Bible study, you know, getting me to the point where I can realize that, hey, I can do these things, and this isn't going to be as difficult as maybe I thought it would be.
We're talking with a roundtable of young men who are studying to be pastors here at Concordia University in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Andrew Yeager, Joshua Schmidt, Andy Wright, and Jacob Miller. We're broadcasting live from Concordia University in Ann Arbor, Michigan, live this Monday. It's May the 1st. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Okay, are you guys scared? Are any of you willing to admit that you're scared about the prospect of serving as a pastor in the church? I see you nodding your head there. Talk about that, if you would.
Well, I can't imagine what it's like the first time you stand up into a pulpit. I mean, you preach and everybody is listening to every word you say, hopefully if they're not asleep or so. But, you know, what you say, you're preaching the word of God to those people. And I'm terrified that I'm going to just say something that is just going to be, I don't know, heretical or something like that. But I don't know. I am scared of the prospect of having such a responsibility, but that's why the pastors wear the stoles. They have the weight of their church on their shoulders.
They will beat that out of you at the seminary pretty quickly. I distinctly remember they don't let you into a real pulpit for a while. They let you into a play pulpit in front of a video camera so you can't do anyone any harm. You can always erase videotape. When they do that, they kind of beat the terror out of you after a while. That will go away, I guarantee it will go away. What about the rest of you? Is there any kind of prospect of the ministry? I mean, just honestly, you say, okay, now that kind of, that holds a little trepidation for me.
Right. I anticipate the call process to be something of a bit of a worry for me. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland, and the East Coast isn't, you know, the home to the Missouri Synod the way the Midwest and the Great Plains are. So maybe a little fear of the rural community someday.
He's afraid of cows? What's a getting run over by a tractor? Is that what you're afraid of?
Right. Tractors are a lot scarier than big buildings, so, I guess.
And what about you? Is there anything, Joshua, that is that holds kind of a little fear for you about the pastoral ministry?
Well, I don't know if I have anything specific in mind, but sometimes I'm sure it can be a nerve-wracking experience, as Andy was talking about, preaching in front of people and always being expected to know the right answer. You know, if you're in Bible study someday and one of your members asks you a really tough question that you really don't know the answer to, you know, you might be afraid to say, well, I don't really know.
Don't be afraid to say that.
And I know it shouldn't be, but there's kind of that fear of not knowing how to answer a question.
Okay, I'm looking back over Joshua's shoulder at some of the pastors who are sitting there, and you'll notice that one of them has no hair, and the other one has white hair. So all the fears that you may anticipate are really there. In fact, I think every pastor in this room, unless one of them's not wearing a collar, either has no hair or white hair, with the exception of Baisley back there, who's so laid back, his blood pressure is so low, that nothing fazes him at all. Is it true? Just for men. Oh, I see. You know, I had full color hair before I started working with Jeff Schwartz. And he's the one who gave me the gray and drove me to drink and all those other things that trouble me now. A couple of you have had experience with something we talk about here regularly on Issues, etc., and that's Christ Academy at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. I think the two of you down there at the end of the table have been proctors at Christ Academy. With about 30 seconds apiece, starting with you, if you would talk about your experience at Christ Academy at Concordia Theological Seminary.
That was definitely formative for me personally. Answered many, many questions that I had about the ministry. Gave me an idea of the life and the day in the life of a pastor, and showed me a side of the seminary that I probably would never have gotten outside of Christ Academy. I was proctor there for about 3 years, and I love it. I encourage all young men who are thinking about the ministry to check it out.
What about you?
Yeah, I agree with Andrew. It was very, if you're just even considering going into the ministry, or even maybe not even that, it's just a good way to see what it is that a pastor studies. They treat you like you're a seminarian for 2 weeks, and you learn from the professors themselves, and it's just amazing the knowledge that you gain from that experience. And then you go to chapel just many times during the day, and it all comes together, the practice of that doctrine that you've learned, and it's a very formative experience, and the community is very welcoming to you.
Finally, for each one of you, After you went home and told mom or dad or the folks, I'd like to become a pastor. I'll tell you my experience. When I called mom and dad and told them that I was going into the pre-seminary program, my dad was kind of encouraging, and my mom just flat out told me that's a terrible idea. That's a bad idea, which is kind of what she says to me at every major milestone of my life. She'll tell me, that's, and then later she'll change her mind. Both of them now have kind of become very encouraging about it, but they were a little concerned about their young, about their son going into this calling. Any concern from home, from the parents saying, we're not so sure about this? Any of you? Joshua?
I would actually have to say no. My parents have really been extremely supportive of my decision to go into the pre-seminary program and come to this school and then to further my education at the seminary and become a pastor. And I definitely have to thank them for that, because they've really encouraged me this entire time.
Same experience, generally speaking, with the rest of you guys?
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Very good to hear. And I think that we probably have four very fine future pastors on our hands. Gentlemen, all of you, thank you very much for the hard work you're putting in right now, because it's needed. It's going to get harder. I can guarantee you, when you get to the seminary, whether it's St. Louis or Fort Wayne, it's going to start out hard and get harder and harder and harder until they find you, kick you out the door and tell you to begin the real hard work, which is being a shepherd of God's flock. So thank you very much for the efforts that you're putting in here at Concordia Ann Arbor, and thanks for being our guests on Issues Etc.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we had mentioned Christ Academy 2005. They're holding another one this summer, Christ Academy 2006. I guess it is the year 2006. It's a two-week residential program every summer on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, where high school-aged men come for that 2 weeks. They spend time in the classroom with the real-life seminary professors. They go to chapel three times a day. They are as fully incorporated into the life of the seminary and the students there as they possibly can be. And it has been, for many a young man, that first step or that major step in deciding to study for the pastoral ministry. If you know of a young man who's interested, who has some aptitude, who you wonder might be a good future pastor, tell them about Christ Academy 2005. If you're able to do it, you might even pay their way to Christ Academy 2006. I'll get my years right, I promise. Christ Academy 2006. For more information, you can go to our website, issuesetc.org. There's a logo for Christ Academy 2006 somewhere on the webpage. Also, you can call Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155. When we come back, a pastor's roundtable on original sin. Stay tuned. The second hour of Issues Etc. is next.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.